Hello and welcome to the Aperiodcast for the 13th of May 2012. We're going to cover what's happened in the last 2 weeks since the last Aperiodcast. That's not 1 week since the last one because we're rubbish and it is the Aperiodical, so who knows what the gaps between these things are. I'm Christian Perfect, I'm one of the editors, and with me are Katie Steckles.
Hello.
And Peter Rowlett. And Peter Rowlett.
You've been practicing the name of the podcast because you did that a lot better than I did.
I'm very good with words.
Aperiodcast. You said it very.
Yeah. Well, Aperi plus podcast minus a P. I don't know. Right. Let's get straight into it. So, we've had quite a lot of news in the past 2 weeks and a couple of good feature articles. But the article that has been most read is something about the Futurama theorem being slightly improved or majorly improved, depending on how you look at it. So I posted this one. Some students, I think they're just undergrads, have had a look at a theorem that was proved for an episode of Futurama and given a slightly better solution than the maths PhD who writes for Futurama did. And also proved that their solution is optimal. So that's fun. Any of you got anything to say about that?
Yeah, so have I remembered rightly that theorem is a bit of a strong term, or is this... I thought I remembered from the time this was a bit of group theory, but calling it a theorem was a bit over the top.
Yeah, it's possibly a lemma. It's an application of group theory to a particular thing. I should say what it is. Four of the characters get their heads swapped, and then there's a machine that can swap people's heads, but it can't swap the same pair of people twice. So they need to find a sequence involving the entire cast of the show that gets everyone's heads back in their way. So that's just finding permutations in a group, which is what the theorem was. I'd call it a theorem, I suppose. They proved some fact about permutation groups that hadn't been written down before. Okay. It's always a subjective decision when to call something a theorem.
Yes.
But as it's the only result in the thing they published, I think that qualifies it.
I thought it was a really cool episode of Futurama just because they got themselves into this huge tangle, and at the end, I think it's two basketball players come in.
It's the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yes, Globetrotters come in and say, it's okay, we can fix this all using at most two further people. These two basketball players volunteer themselves to help everyone kind of swap back into the right places. But it's just fantastic because he's got a blackboard and he does the theorem it's just like as though maths is the most casual thing in the world to introduce at this stage. It's just magic.
And I seem to remember that there was a slightly lingering shot on the actual theorem, wasn't there, so you can get a decent screen grab. Yes, let's show you the blackboard of working. So what's different about this thing, Bruce?
What's different this time? They've looked at the solution the Futurama writer gave, found it wasn't quite the shortest solution. Mm-hmm. So they've given an optimal one, proved it's optimal, and then looked at some other situations that are sort of similar and also given optimal solutions to those. So they've slightly improved it. Okay, so that's Futurama theorem slightly improved. So the next thing we talk about is what people have been commenting on in the past 2 weeks since the last Aperiodcast. So that's an article about a bit of research that says the number line is not an intuitive concept. Who wants to explain this one?
I can. There was some research done on the people from Papua New Guinea who don't have maths in the same way as everyone else and quite often get experimented on for that reason. There's a lot of these kind of discussions about cultures that don't have counting or don't have numbers in the same way or whatever, and they find these obscure isolated communities to go and experiment on what happens when you're not kind of in the same society as everyone else. But essentially the concept of having a number line, having sort of the integers arranged on a line, isn't necessarily intuitive in the sense that you might think, given that everyone basically learns numbers in that way, it's not something that they had ever heard of, having learnt numbers for themselves in their own way. And it's also put caused quite a lot of cool discussion about number lines in terms of, in the article it mentions that like a room full of people, opinion was divided whether the number line runs vertically or horizontally, and various comments that people have added have said, yeah, I know someone who knew a number line that bends 90 degrees in different places and so on, which is quite cool. And I think I was at like a training thing yesterday, and we were talking about everyone having a different mode of thinking about things. And the example that was given was, if you count to 10 in your head, some people kind of hear the numbers spoken in their own voice or in someone else's voice. Some people kind of see the numbers appear one at a time and they pop up, or they sort of scroll across, or they scroll up and down. And because everyone has their own kind of mental way of thinking about things. So it's really interesting that I guess the number line maybe depends on the orientation of the number line in your primary school classroom. I think that's, but that kind of makes sense, that if your first introduction to it is, this is what the number line looks like, then you'll then use that as a mental kind of anchor for any other kind of number work you do. But it's really cool, and I'm pleased that it's generated a lot of comment, because there's quite a lot of things, like quite a lot of opinions on it. And and yeah, the other thing about logs as well, like it's more natural to use a log scale than a linear number line, and that sort of small children can intuitively do that. Like if you ask them to place things, I think the paper finds that they allocate more space to the smaller numbers, and then it sort of gets closer and closer as you get bigger, which is interesting as well.
Yeah, and the issue of it's much easier to tell the difference between 1 and 10 than it is to tell the difference between, I don't know, 8 and 9 or something like that. That you've got these kind of, I don't know, doubling it is much bigger, but if they're about the same, it's sometimes harder to tell if you're only looking at a pair of dots, for example, for a brief moment or something like this. So a quick poll then. As far as I'm concerned, numbers run left to right.
What do you think? I agree with that.
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Now, I wondered about this because did somebody in here mention complex numbers? And the complex plane is always written with the reals left, you know, horizontally, and the imaginary numbers vertically, isn't it? So I don't know if that would then force anyone who's done mathematics to that level into the same way of thinking.
Yeah, so John Reed made that comment.
Ah, yes.
He asks about children who've been taught about complex numbers, and I've never met one of those.
Right. I don't know, it depends where you're putting children, isn't it? I mean,
we did that in
A-level, I suppose.
They'll definitely be, they'll be all over complex numbers by the time they hit 5.
Well, I definitely, in my many years' experience at our math support service, know that the, what are they called, the diagrams that you draw for complex numbers? What's the name?
Argand
diagrams,
yeah.
People don't get those at all. You have to really explain. This is like the graphs you've been drawing since you were 12. So I think we've definitely got no intuition for complex numbers.
Mm. So maybe your first question in that case should be, draw a number line from 1 to 10 and see if they draw it vertically. And if they do, you say, oh dear, you're going to have trouble understanding this then.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that, that people whose number lines are vertical, once they get to complex numbers.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm asking. Are they disadvantaged?
Maybe they are. Maybe that's why they all have so much trouble when they come to me.
Mm.
Or this person whose number line bends, who knows what their graph is.
Oh, that's weird. So it goes to 10 and then it bends, and then around 50 it changes direction again. And that's very strange. Apparently this is a thing, though. Apparently this happens.
Mm. I can sort of get that. The day you were told there were more numbers past 10, you think, oh, I'll just add that over there in your head. And if you're very spatial, you might think, oh, that needs to bump up a bit or run out of space or something.
Yeah.
But, oh, yeah. So that was the most commented on article of the past 2 weeks. And so what else has caught your attention that we should talk about?
Well, we should definitely say the Carnival of Mathematics has been published. So the Carnival of Mathematics is a monthly blogging roundup, I think is the best way of describing it. What happens is it's hosted on a different blog every month, and people send in blog posts either that they've written or that they've seen and liked to the Carnival host, and then at the end of the month, that person, after a month, that person then writes a blog post which points to all these interesting things that have been sent in. And so we've taken over looking after this. Mike Croucher did it for a couple of years, and a very fine job he's done too, but he wanted to move on, so we've taken over. And I hosted the last one, but this one is number 86, which has been hosted on a blog called The Math Less Travelled. So you can find a link. Carnival Mathematics is at the top of the page on aperiodical.com. So that's good. And as a sort of example of there are various posts here, I quite liked one. Mike Croucher's Walking Randomly blog is listed in here, and he's been on a tour of a building in Manchester which has some mathematically themed stained glass. With sort of, it mentions Newton and Descartes and Napier and De Morgan and Leibniz, and has mathematics written across the thing. And through this, he's also discovered some more modern stained glass in King's College, Cambridge, which has a Venn diagram on it. And he wants to know if there are any more examples of mathematics in stained glass. So do go and find that post and write in to Mike if you know of any, I suppose. So that's the sort of thing. So you can go and read the Carnival of Mathematics and find a whole bunch of interesting posts that have been submitted in the last month. And I suppose submissions for Carnival of Maths 87 are now open, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah. There's details on the Carnival of Maths page.
And who's hosting that one?
It's going to be hosted by John at Random Walks. That's the name of his blog. And the deadline for those is the 1st of June. So it will presumably come out in the week following that at some point. There's like a Google form you can just put in. Like, we essentially just need the address of the blog post and maybe your name. But then also, if you've got any comments to add or anything you've particularly liked about it, that can also help the person writing the post. So there's a field for that as well.
Okay. Very good. I might send something in myself for the first time ever. So a thing I enjoyed this month was your puzzle bomb, Katie, because I managed to do one of the puzzles.
Excellent.
It's never happened before. Oh, no, it happened last month as well. I did the waterfall one. But yeah, you had some good puzzles this time.
Yeah, I think it's getting increasingly difficult to think of better puzzles for future ones. If anyone kind of writes puzzles, basically the aim we're trying to do is to put puzzles on that have not been done before by other people. So like anyone can write a Sudoku or an existing thing and put different numbers in it or whatever. But we've got kind of things that we've just come up with the whole thing sort of between me and various people on Twitter that send me things. So if anyone wants to contribute, then send me on Twitter or email katie@aperiodical.com, because we're always happy to try and feature things if we approve. If they meet our exacting puzzle bomb standards, then we'll definitely think about including things. So we've had in, I think it was in the first issue, there was a puzzle called what was it? Cluedoku. And it was a Sudoku, but with letters in place of numbers, and then some of the sections of it were clued like a crossword. So you didn't get many clues in the actual Sudoku, but you got clues in terms of crossword clues. And I think at the time I said, this is a Sudoku with less than 16 clues, just to wind up some mathematicians. it's all good. I think I enjoy making them, and I'm hoping that people are enjoying filling them in. I'm going to try and work on a really good maths puzzle for next month. Probably I've just committed myself to that. But yeah, I'll try and do a nice mathy one again, like the waterfall.
That was a really nice one. It was, at first, I couldn't really get my head around whether you can just proceed from top to bottom or what. But once you've got your first couple of clues in, you really see how you can narrow down what each of the bits can be.
Mm.
So it was a nice, achievable, I don't know, could we give this a climbing grade? A four?
Yeah, a four. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was very fun. Anything else we've seen?
Oh, we also had the food piece. Christian?
Okay. Oh, okay. Too modest. So Katie has a friend who was sent Herman the German friendship cake. And this is a pretty insidious scheme to get middle-class mothers occupied on other things. It's basically a yeast culture for a sourdough, and you get some instructions that say, this is your Hermann, you have to look after it, you have to feed it, and at the end you make a cake. So you grow this Hermann, and then after 10 days, it's quadrupled in size. You split it in four, three portions become future Hermanns, and another portion becomes a cake. So these Hermanns can grow exponentially. So Katie thought, how quickly does it grow? And can I compare it to other foods? So she's compared it with ginger beer plants and yogurt. And I was so taken with it, I had to make some graphs to show what happens. So that was a very fun article.
Yeah, it was a bit silly. I thought, you know, there's a bit of maths in this. It's just enough maths in this to make it interesting. But then as soon as Christian saw it, he was like, oh, wow, we should do comparisons and we should do graphs and all that stuff. And I was like, actually, yeah, we can put loads of maths in this and entertain people. I think Christian's exact comment when he first saw it was, the Twitters will go mad for this. I know what he means. It's the kind of thing that people go, oh, that's cool. Yeah, I'm going to send that on to people. So I think it's done.
I noticed that as an encouragement to go and read it, one of the comment on the post at the moment from Tony C says, I absolutely love this post, and has a giant smiley face. So that can't be bad.
Yeah.
If he's happy, it's got to be good.
Yeah, I think it's nice to talk about stuff that other people might get into, because as people commented and said, like, oh, I do lots of home cooking and I've made my own yogurt before, and this is really, you know, it's just really nice that the, you know, this is—it's not all just about really dry maths papers. Not that our website is all about really dry maths papers, but
sometimes I fall asleep editing our website. It's full of so many dry articles about maths. Really,
well, that's why I'm.
You've livened it up. I was astonished by the yogurt graph. I live in fear of yogurt now. I'm not going to buy it anymore. I won't encourage it.
It's not that the substance left on its own will multiply. You do have to add ingredients. Like this thing that quadruples in size over 10 days, that's because you add a cup of flour and a cup of milk every few days. But yeah, essentially, given enough milk, yogurt would reach peak yogurt within a very short time if every bit of yogurt was made into more yogurt. So
yeah, I think after 5 days, we had something like 8 × 10⁷ gallons of yogurt. So the world's milk production could be given over to yogurt. Okay, so that was that. Grow Your Own Food, it's called. I think it might still be on the front page. It's very readable, very fun.
And that's on Katie's blog, Blackboard Bold.
Oh yes, click through Blackboard Bold and see the rest of Katie's posts. So the other thing that has happened is that the world loves us, or selected people from the world love us. So thank you, everyone who's been tweeting and encouraging us. I think there's one that particularly affected you, Peter.
Oh, well, I quite like Peter Kreutzberger said that we were the... I can't remember the exact wording. He said we were the clear favourite for best thing that's happened to math or maths blogging this year. Which I thought was... and he reads a lot of math blogs. So
he reads them all. He literally reads everyone.
Yes. Yeah, so Peter's from mathblogging.org, which if you don't know, you should go and have a look at it. It indexes mathematical blogs.
And the weekly picks, if you don't want to read every single maths blog like he does, he picks out a few each week, which are typically of a pretty good quality.
Yeah, I think there's a team of, I think there are three of them. But Peter's the one who I speak to the most.
Yeah. And someone called Charlotte Hillebrand as well.
Yeah, I really like...
Yes, she said very nice things about my podcast, maths podcast with Samuel, but she also mentions the periodical, does she?
Yeah, I really like the way that she just sort of throws it in as like, because she sort of does this blog post that's sort of a random bunch of comments, and then the last one is there like a physics version of things like the Maths podcast and the Aperiodical? It's as though it's part of kind of just the acknowledged set of things that there are already. It's not, Like,
yeah, absolutely. On the previous bullet point, she goes, see this thing on XKCD, or this thing on the Inferiorical. It's like, what? Oh, hold on.
It's not
high, okay. High company. Yeah.
Or the Aperiodical. It's, yeah, it's actually just, you know, that thing that everyone knows about. Oh, well.
Yes.
Yeah, Charlotte, if you're listening to this, and you might well be, we're not as great as you think we are. We've just started. But thank you very much. That was, an extremely kind blog post. Sorry.
The physics version of things like this, or is it just that mathematicians have got their act together?
I find that unbelievable, because I suggested we start this because I thought all the other sciences were already doing this.
Yeah.
Well, there's John Byers does mathematical physics, his weekly thing.
I guess It depends, because like in terms of like astrophysics, there's the Jodcast, which is done by some people from Jodrell Bank and at Manchester Uni.
Oh, that's very clever. That's better than a Aperiodcast.
Oh, yeah. But I think, I'm not sure if there is sort of just a physics. Well, I mean, what is there to talk about in physics? Physics
Ooh,
that, is...
Those quite... are fighting words. We're going to get emails.
It's just, I know. It's, you know, with more numbers. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, well, they seem to find ways to occupy their time.
Let's wrap things up before I offend any more subjects.
Okay. So what's coming up in the near future on the Aperiodical? Got any plans?
Nothing. Well, you seem to have a bunch of people threatening to write things for us, don't we?
Yeah. So Colm Mulcahy, who has written a few things for us already, is working on something really cool to do with square pegs in round holes and vice versa. That should be out tomorrow as we record this, so Monday. That looks really good. And we've had quite a few emails from people offering to write stuff for us, which is very good. And if you'd like to write something for us, I think I prompted enough people on Twitter, but if you're listening to this and you think I could write some maths that's interesting, please send an email to root@aperiodical.com. And we'll send you all the info you need.
Cool. Now my current plan is, earlier in the year I was writing up a day I'd had in London where I'd been and seen a lot of things and I stalled. And the next post is going to be about seeing the maths in the city in overall tour. But I definitely need to write that at some point soon. I just don't seem to be able to find time to get around to it so far.
There's also a possibility... if he can find time in his busy schedule, that we may have a secret new surprise guest columnist. But, you know, maybe we should keep that under wraps.
Oh, well, that sounds intriguing.
Yes.
Well, I wanted to end on that because that's a good bit of mystery to end on. But I'll just say that I think I've got enough links for another Aperiodical roundup, and I've got some really good ones this time. I hype it every time, but I think I've really got some good ones this time. So that should be coming soon.
Cool.
Okay, so that was the last almost 2 weeks on the Aperiodical. We will make another one of these after some period of time, maybe. So we'll just say goodbye now.
Goodbye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.